right. Here we go. On Sunday, Memorial Day weekend in Las Vegas, I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here live in the Fox Sports RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank Studio, every Sunday morning at 8 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1348 AM, Las Vegas flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights, and sister station of Raiders Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. We also includes social media director Spencer the Wiz Ostrowski.
Nobody beats the wind.
And producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who aside from being a part of several shows here at Lotus Broadcasting, Mags also serves as the locker room reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. Follow the show on Instagram and X at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome. The Fox Sports RCG Home Loans powered by Luminate Bank Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap, brought to you by title sponsor RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. To get information or to get questions answered regarding anything mortgage or real estate related, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720. On Tap.
We got to look at what's in front of us. You know, we got the best fans in the NBA here, and we got another game in front of them to go after these guys. And believe me when I tell you, we are going after them.
Rick Carlisle, coach of the Indiana Pacers, they're going after them. Down 3-0, can't close or hold the lead, but they're going after them.
They're going home is what they're doing.
That's exactly what they're doing. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Also, the Vegas Golden Knights, they are resting right now for next season as the NHL's conference finals really are heating up. We'll talk all about that. I want to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights and the defenseman situation. Not a problem by any means. Maybe a problem figuring out who the top six players are going to be going into next season. As we mentioned, conference finals, we'll talk about that. NBA playoffs, of course, we're in the conference finals in the NBA as well, and it looks like the Dallas Mavericks and the Boston Celtics are on a collision course. We'll brush on that in a little bit. Also, the Las Vegas Aces off to a pretty good start, 4-1 on the season right now after beating the Indiana Fever last night by double digits. Caitlin Clark, not post-game interview material, I guess. We weren't able to talk to her after the game, but do have a little bit of sound from that we'll talk to as well. Antonio Brown bankrupt. Really? Yeah, that's coming up as well. And anything going on in the NFL? Well, CeeDee Lamb hasn't shown up for the Dallas's OTAs yet. Why? We'll let you know about that. And the Aviators coming home after a little bit of a road trip. They'll be home a little bit later this week. Final day of a road trip today. All that and more coming your way next. That is What's on Tap, brought to you by RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank. Again, if you are looking to buy a home or refinance the home you currently own, or if you have any mortgage or real estate related questions, contact the mortgage experts at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720. Memorial Day weekend, man. Another one of those long weekends. And when things are rolling, you're making lots of money. It's good to have that extra day off. You like it. When you're not and you're a commissioned employee out there, and I've talked to a few of those, man, Monday's like a curse. They want to work, man. They don't want people taking the day off. But that's the world we live in right now, Chris. It's a matter of you want to work every day you can.
I don't subscribe to that philosophy. I'm a big believer in, you know what, life is short. When I die, it doesn't matter how much money I've got in my wallet. It's not my responsibility to leave a ton of money to my son. Like, I've only got one child, and it's not my responsibility to leave him life-changing money. He turns 18. That's on him now. But
it's always nice if you can, though.
Well, yeah, of course. But you know what? I'm not going to not enjoy my life because I'm focused on leaving money to my
son. Well, I think you know you're preaching to the choir over here. I might say a lot of my friends are complaining about the day off. The only reason I might want to work Monday and I am working tomorrow is because
you work in a very different type of business.
But also next week at this time,
you'll be in Costa Rica.
I'll be doing the show. Spencer will be sitting in my seat, and I'll be in Costa Rica. Matter of fact, the next 2 weeks, Spencer will be filling in. I think in a couple weeks, C-Win's going to sit in with them, and Mags and Spence will guide the ship. I'll be chiming in next week a little bit happier. I'll try to make sure I can do video so I can make you all jealous in the background. But no, I'm a huge advocate. You know, my dad used to always say, Chris, he said that, you know, if he dies with one dime in his bank account, not allocated towards something good, then he failed as a human being. He said, what am I leaving it for? The banks? I mean, the bottom line is I'm 99.9% sure you leave this world with exactly what you came in with it, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what you're saving for. You got these multimillionaires squeezing their last penny at 90 years old, and it blows my mind that somehow they think they're going to cross over and retain wealth.
I think in the case of a lot of those guys, they want the power that comes along with having that much
money. Till their last breath.
Yeah.
Till your very last breath.
There's, you know, it's funny. I'm about a decade behind on television shows, and I finally started watching Boardwalk Empire. And I'm into the fifth season now, and one of the mobsters is retiring. And he's like, yeah, it's a young man's game. Get out while he could. I don't know what's going to happen to him. Like, there's only a couple episodes left, so I don't know what's going to happen. But it's like, look, man, young man's game. Get out. He ate a couple bullets, and he's like, you know what? I'm done.
Enough is enough, man. Yeah. Time to get out of the game and get into the game of life while you still have a little bit of an opportunity.
Yeah, but Memorial Day is one of those that I think it means it maybe not to a lot of people. Like, I think maybe they don't quite understand. You know, they a lot of times they confuse Memorial Day with Veterans Day. And Memorial Day is the day that we obviously remember those who passed fighting.
Yeah.
When I lived in the Philippines, I don't know how many people would know this, but I lived in Manila. And within the city of Manila, actually really close to the airport, when you leave the airport, you fly out over this. There is a United States military cemetery that has 30,000 troops that were killed in Vietnam and in the Pacific Wars, buried in the Philippines. And I took a trip there one day, and first of all, it's massive. I've been to Arlington Cemetery, and I feel like it's every bit as big as Arlington Cemetery. I mean, 30,000 burial plots is a lot of people. And you know, it's a really solemn reminder the men, especially men and now women. At this time, there weren't women in the military fighting in Japan and Vietnam and Korea.
Germany.
But now we do have women defending our freedom as well. And, you know, I'm not Johnny Patriot, and, you know, I'm not going to rah-rah USA. Like, I'm not going to play Lee Greenwood tomorrow. But my father was, you know, he served. My grandfather served. His brother served. In fact, his brother served on the English side during World War II. So, you know, I've got a long history with family members. My cousin, he's an officer in the Navy. So we've got a long history of Chapman and extended family serving. And, you know, Memorial Day, it does mean something to me. And Veterans Day means a lot to me. And so tomorrow's a day. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to sit by the pool and I'm going to drink a beer and I'm going to remember the people who made that possible for me. And, you know, I respect the hell out of our military. I respect the hell out of these young men and women who are willing to go out there and sacrifice. And, you know, some of them may not have a choice. Like, I nearly didn't have that choice coming out of high school because I was a screw up. And the only option for me was basically military or get a job. I wanted to see the world a little bit, and I actually thought about joining. Didn't turn out that way. I kind of chickened out at the end. And, you know, it was the idea that they were going to maybe put me on a nuclear sub that kind of scared me. But yeah, look, take a moment this weekend at some point and even if it's for a minute, just remember the brave men and women who sacrificed everything so we could sit here and do this radio show and we could talk trash about Rick Carlisle and, you know, talk trash about the Edmonton Oilers.
No, I agree. And, Memorial Day, Veterans Day, two different things. Veterans Day, you're honoring all veterans living and deceased. Memorial Day is just that. It is Memorial Day. And, Chris, I've never been to Arlington, and I've wanted to go. It's on my bucket list, 30,000 graves. But one thing I have been to Washington, D.C., and I did see the Vietnam Memorial, the wall.
It makes you
and
cry.
It truly is one of the most overwhelming things I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, you go through, and it's pretty cool. They give you, like, a pencil and paper where you can, you know, kind of like make a little paper piece of a name. And I went up there looking, are there any Feldmans with all the wall? There was one Feldman, Alan Feldman, but he had two N's on his name. So there was not actually a Feldman that fought in the Vietnam War. There were several.
Well, one that didn't die or go missing.
No, yeah, correct. Yeah. And, you know, I know there were a few that fought in the World War II. You mentioned veterans.
I did that at Pearl Harbor. We went to Pearl Harbor when I was probably about 20. And again, it's such an overwhelming experience. Like you,
the Arizona Memorial's. It's eerie. Your hair stands up on your arm.
It kind of any joy you have on the boat ride over there
it goes away
as soon as you step onto that platform and you look down and you see the remnants of the USS Arizona. Like it's a gut punch. And like you, I looked on the wall and there was one Chapman. I don't remember his first name, but there was a Chapman who was on the Arizona at the time and lost his life and. You know, it makes you think, you know, I mean, this guy could have been.
Well, you know, it's Chris. It's like luck. You know, I always use a line like, you know, the only difference between me and someone starving in Ethiopia is purely luck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, you hit the lottery.
And I just happened to be born at a time that I fell in between all the wars. I never was threatened to get drafted. I mean, Desert Storm, I was just slightly too old. I was almost 30 years old when Desert Storm took place.
Yeah.
And obviously Vietnam was before my time. I remember as a little boy being in Disneyland, and they shut Disneyland down. This was like 1970 or 71, because I guess for lack of a better term, the hippies took over the park. Back then, you didn't need to pay to get into Disneyland. It just was you bought ticket books.
Oh.
So anyone could walk around the park, and they just started creeping in, and we saw all these people just kind of walking around, you know, barefoot, and it was pretty bizarre. And next thing you know, they're telling us we had to leave the park, took the monorail back to the Disneyland Hotel, which were just one small hotel at the time in Anaheim, and had to stay in our room for like 2 days, had room service coming. It sucked being a little boy. I'm in Disneyland, for God's sakes. But that was a protest to Vietnam, which was the most heavily protested war in American history.
Yeah.
And you know, they joke around about having one loss. That was the one loss that America definitely suffered, because there was no winning in the outcome, just several casualties. And pretty wild. And, you know, talking about Memorial Day, my grandfather being in World War II, one of the stories that he never told me, my mom told me, and it's something he never talked about, his best friend who he had gone to boot camp with and everything, they got stationed, you know, the station together, and then, of course, they were shipped out together, and, you know, Normandy, and, you know, he went through that, and the wild thing was he carried his best friend dead for about 2 miles because he refused to accept that he was dead. Never told me about it. I never asked him about it. Last time I saw my grandfather, I was in high school, that grandfather, so never got a chance. My mom told me she knew the story, and you can only imagine what war when you see it. You know, the one depiction that I did hear from a World War II vet that he said the beginning of the movie Saving Private Ryan was the most actual like depiction of what it was like to be in World War II, to be there. And you know, he said he couldn't watch the movie, like he started watching it in the theater, and had to leave the theater because it was so, you know, the
so realistic,
was overwhelming with the sound of bullets almost flying past your head. That was overwhelming, and that's how it was. Those little boats, that little transport boats that came in, they said the first like several waves, the average American survivor was 1 in 10 survived. Oof. So you almost knew if you were on one of those little platforms, your chances are done. I mean, even if you go over the side, number one, you're carrying enough equipment that you could drown if it's too deep.
Yeah.
And number two, the bullets fly through the water. It's not like they don't go, they can't
penetrate
like they
stop.
The water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
there's a lot of really good war movies. The one I recently, I mean, I'd seen it, but Dunkirk I thought was really good.
What was the one with the guy, the true story, who wouldn't fight? It was against his belief to fight. And he saved like 100 men. He kept climbing back up this hill, dropping him down.
I just saw it recently,
and it was overwhelming. They were calling him a coward, giving him all kinds
Hacksaw Ridge.
Thanks, Spence. But they were giving him all kinds of grief because he wouldn't fight, literally getting beaten up in boot camp and stuff. And then the guy gets there, and he turns out to get a he got like a Purple Heart and the Medal of Honor.
I mean, it's a real story. It's a true story. Yeah.
So how much of a coward was that guy? Yeah. Wouldn't carry a gun in war, and yet saves like 100 lives. I mean, it's really incredible. Really cool thing. If you haven't seen Hacksaw Ridge, I saw that about 2 months ago for the first time, and I was surprised I hadn't seen it sooner. But listen, happy Memorial Day out there to all. Enjoy your day off. But yeah, as Chris said, man, tip your hat, have a cocktail, have a toast. If you don't drink, tap a glass of iced tea to all the veterans that have died protecting this country and allowing us all to live the way that we live. And truly, you know, freedom does exist. And people question that and stuff. There's some other countries you can go to and you can see how different it is. You want to be American and you want to realize how good you have it? Go to Nicaragua. Travel around there as an American, the number one country in the world for Americans getting kidnapped. It's a beautiful country, absolutely gorgeous. I have a dear friend from there. However, it is a very dangerous place, and that is, it's not a dictator. They call him El Presidente, but Daniel Ortega is a dictator, trust me. Listen, let's move on. Spencer, go ahead and hit it. We got a short version of Nightcap today.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
You know, Chris, speaking of the puck starting here, the puck stops with the last line of defense, which is your goaltender, but right in front of that is your defenseman. And one of the issues with the Vegas Golden Knights is that they didn't have last year. Their defense several times through the season was suspect. Granted, you had injuries to White Cloud, to Martinez, again, to Shea Theodore. Braden McNabb's a rock back there, but Alex Petrangelo missed time this year. Chris, going into next season, I think we all know that Alec Martinez is going to be gone. He's not going to be a Golden Knight next year. We also are wondering whether guys like White Cloud will be back. I mean, Shea Theodore is a guy that I think will be here next year for sure, but down the road is going to be a question mark as his contract's going to come up, and he's got to be more consistent. He definitely fell off a bit this year. I think Nick Hague has established himself as one of the defensemen, but you've got other guys, Chris, chomping at the bit. A guy like Ben Hutton, who was the number one fill-in guy on defense, but a guy that's really been kind of forgotten, Caden Korzak, really has proved, I think, in the sample size we had, about 25 games, had about 15 points, really showed that he can play both offensive and defenses, and obviously with the addition of Noah Hanifin before the training deadline. This is a team with 8 defensemen, in my opinion, that are going to be left when the smoke clears, and 6 spots. Who are those 6 guys right now, in your opinion?
Well, it's very clearly the 2 for sure. Actually, there's 4 that are locks. Noah Hanifin, absolutely. I mean, he's not going anywhere. You just signed him. Alex Petrangelo. Boy, I almost call him Alec. Alex Petrangelo.
Oh, you got Alec Martinez,
so. Right, yeah. Alex Petrangelo is definitely going to be here. Braden McNabb is definitely going to be here. And Nick Hague is definitely going to be here. I don't think when this team drops the puck next October that Shea Theodore is going to be a member of this team.
Okay.
I think he will be traded for the reason that, A, you need the cap space. He's about $5 million on the cap space. B, he's entering the final year of his contract, and I don't think you're going to be able to re-sign him at the end of that contract. This team's done bigger things, and they've always proved that if you say they can't do it, they can do it. But I think he's going to demand too much money. And the other thing is, I think his play fell off when he came back from injury. And you have Noah Hanifin, who does everything that Shea Theodore does, except better.
I would agree, and the one thing I'll say with Theodore, you said A, B, and you talked about his fall off after injury, and I talked a lot about that at the end of the season, but you also, the injury is the number C. I mean, every year he misses a substantial amount of time, and when he's your one or two, number one or number two best defenseman, you can't have that, and I agree. I think, the thing is with Alex Petrangelo, Guys, he was hurt last year. Not just hurt, he had surgery at the end of the season. When you have an appendectomy, for God's sakes, right at the end of the season, it takes it out of you. You're going to lose, even though you might be in great physical shape, it sets you back a bit. So once he's had the offseason, he's fully recovered from something like, you know, appendix surgery, which is very commonplace, he's going to be fine. He's one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League. Granted, he's in his 30s now, but he's got a couple of great years left in him. Yes.
He's still really
good. He'll be fine. As you mentioned, Noah Hanifin, I think, the second best transaction the Golden Knights made, picking him up at the trading deadline. I still say what they got initially, even though he won't be a Vegas Golden Knight next year, Stevenson, to me, it was the best deal the Vegas Golden Knights have had in their six-year history. But as far as acquisition, picking up a guy, Noah Hanifin, man, yeah. What a great pickup. This guy is going to be cemented as a defenseman for the Vegas Golden Knights.
He may be a Norris Trophy finalist.
I think he's a guy you can talk about in that light because he's an offensive-minded defenseman, but yet he plays both ways.
And he's very, very responsible defensively. He doesn't leave you out to dry.
And he's physical. Shea Theodore is not, where you talk about him being better, that's the element of Noah Hanifin's game that I think was missing from Shea Theodore's game. Shea Theodore, not that he was ever afraid to go in the corner and get the puck, but Noah Hanifin will chase you in the corner and knock the crap out of you. That's the difference.
And none of this is to say that Shea Theodore is not a good player.
Oh, my God, a great
player.
Because
I think there's a chance if you did move him, you could potentially get a first-round pick for him.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's how good he is. But I just think I think they want to re-sign Marcus.
Okay, so who's the other two?
I think White Cloud. You're not moving White Cloud.
No, White Cloud's going to be here.
And look, White Cloud may not have had a great 2024. White Cloud was phenomenal in 2023.
He was, and I agree he'll come back.
And
but
for the money you're paying him, it's a steal.
He's a bargain.
He's a bargain. Yep. So I think he'll be back.
So it comes down to Ben Hutton and Caden Korzak.
And I think those two guys will split. Because I think you want
so when someone gets injured, whoever's not getting the nod will be the next guy in.
And I like Ben Hutton a lot. Like, Ben Hutton's playing on probably 25 out of 32 teams in the NHL. In fact, he might be playing on 32 out of 32 teams in the NHL, except
Chris,
this one.
I'm going to say I like him a lot, too, but I like Caden Korzak better.
I think there's the upside.
I think is better.
But what you get with Ben Hutton is you get a guy who understands his role. He's responsible. He's never going to cost you games because he makes mistakes. I mean, every player makes mistakes. It happens. It's a fact of life. But Ben Hutton generally is a guy who you put him in the lineup, you know what you're getting from him. He's going to go out there. He's going to play his game. He's not this young guy who thinks he needs to impress the coaching staff. He understands what his job is.
Yep.
And that's why I really like him. And I think you want Korzak in there because you want to start infusing some youth into other spots in the team, which is why I think, you know, Pavel Dorofeev and Paul Cotter are both going to have a more significant role. Yep. I think Paul Cotter will – I think William Carrier is gone, and I think you'll slot Paul Cotter into that fourth line wing where Will Carrier was.
Yep.
And you're going to tell Paul Cotter, go out and play your game.
Yep.
Be physical, but bring some offense. The trade-off there is Cotter's not as physically punishing as Carrier, but he likes to hit. I think he's got a little bit more offensive upside than William Carrier. So I think
William Carrier, stronger.
I love William Carrier. I do too. It's going to hurt.
Stronger, bigger, and also, I would say, scoring talent-wise, they're very similar. However, the thing with Paul Cotter is he's a gnat. He's an aggravator.
Yeah.
Where William Carrier is a guy, you know what you're going to get. He has his patented wind-around-the-net move that he's been doing since day one. I think he scored one goal.
It worked in the playoffs.
For the first time I ever saw it work. I mean, everyone knows what he's going to do when he's behind that. He's going to try a wraparound.
But he's like a bowling ball.
He is like a bowling ball. You know when he's coming, he's going to hit you. But Cotter's the kind of guy, he's just bothersome. He's hitting you. He's whacking you.
And he's running his mouth to you. He's not intimidated.
Again, he's not the physical presence of Carrier, but I think he can fill the same role. He's got to become a little bit more offensive-minded, and I think that's the difference. But I agree with you. Carrier's gone, and I think the top six, I agree with you. And I think everyone, you know, White Cloud played so good last year in the postseason. He really did. But next year, he needs to start quick, Chris. He really does need to show that wasn't lightning in a bottle for him.
Unfortunately for Zach, he had a couple of injuries this year that he was dealing with. I don't think he was ever really able to get. I think he broke his hand or his wrist.
But I'll tell you, you know, with White Cloud, is there anybody that you know that wants to win more than that guy?
No. Like when you talk to him, you think you're talking to Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant. The way he speaks about winning the game and how hard he wants to compete and win. Obviously, a guy who doesn't have, like, the skills that those guys had in their respective sport. But I think what I've seen is I want to see Noah Hanifin and Nick Hague as my top pair.
Interesting.
And I want Petrangelo and McNabb together. And then you go with White Cloud and Hutton or Korzak. Because I think Nick Hague played the best hockey we've ever seen him play when he was playing with Noah Hanifin.
Plus, you know Nick Hague, the one thing about Nick Hague when you stand next to him, he is a big guy. And I don't think people talk enough about that. Yeah, he's not the most physical. Like, when you look, when you stand next to him, like, God, this guy should be cracking everybody.
Yeah.
But you know what? He will hit you. And the bottom line is, he can put the puck in the net as well. He's just as good, solid. You know, I would say one of those guys that's kind of a book note player, a guy that is where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there. And he really came into his own last season.
Yeah, someone told me one time that he transformed from a giraffe into a mountain.
Yeah.
Like, when he first came into the league, he was this tall, skinny, gangly kind of, you know,
Keith Primo.
Yeah. Yes. But as he's turned from a young draft pick, a boy, into a man, he has become a massive human being. And, you know, like, you see him and he's pretty jacked up. Like, he's a guy who, if there's something going down, I want Nick Hague on my side, because he's not a guy who is he's not that skinny, gangly kind of 6'5", like minute bowl kind of body. He's now turned into a guy who he's put the weight on, he's put the mass on, and I mean, he's a big physical player when he really wants to use it. And man, there's times where I'm like, I want to see more of that. No, I want to see more of angry Nick Hague. Like, Nick Hague in the playoffs 2 years ago, when he was laughing and talking trash to the Dallas Stars, like, that was phenomenal. Yeah. That was phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, maybe they need to give him a crap in the locker room before he goes out on the ice or something. Get him a little worked up, because he's definitely a guy, when you're that size in the National Hockey League, you're intimidating. I don't know if you saw the Edmonton, I know you have, the Edmonton-Dallas series, but it's hilarious. That one little guy for Edmonton, the other day, standing next to that beast of Dallas, I can't remember the guy's name for the Dallas Stars, but he comes in and out of the lineup, but he's like 6'7", and he's standing next to a 5'7" guy for Edmonton. It was hilarious. The little guy for Edmonton is smiling, looking up at him like, what am I going to do with this guy? But speaking of that series, you know, Dallas beats Edmonton in game 2, 3-1 yesterday. They're down only one goal, Chris, and I was going to ask you what you thought about this. If you saw the game yesterday, Edmonton is down by only one goal. There's still over 2 minutes to go, like about 2 minutes and 10 seconds to go, and they pull Skinner. Now, what I don't understand about that move is you have the four leading point scorers on the Edmonton Oilers, and that's not even including Zach Hyman, who leads the playoffs with 14 or 15 goals. He's not even one of the top five scorers because he doesn't have as many assists. But the point is, you have that kind of firepower on the Edmonton Oilers. Why are you pulling your goalie with 2 minutes and 10 seconds to go? I think you got to give it at least another 45 seconds because these guys are that good. And I mean, right away, right when they pulled him within 10 seconds, they scored the empty net goal. And that, I understand I'm not, I am questioning it, but I get it. You know, you have different strategies, but I think when you have that much firepower, give it a little more time.
Well, I'm a believer in there being very specific strategies on when you pull the goalie. Like, for starters, I want my team to have full possession of the puck in the offensive zone before I'm pulling my goalie. I don't want any of this where I chip it in and I'm chasing it and that's when my goalie goes to the bench. Like, that's asking for a disaster.
Yep.
I think the timing of it, as you mentioned, you're down a goal. You're not down two goals. Why are you pulling him on
the best goal scorers in hockey on your team?
I mean, to me, that says I don't have confidence in my team 5-on-5.
Yeah,
which I don't think is the case. I mean, I know that's not why Chris Knobloch did it. I just think he got it wrong.
Yeah,
like, I don't think there was any confidence issues. I just think he got it wrong, and With McDavid and Draisaitl and Nugent Hopkins and
Hyman
Bouchard and Hyman.
It's ridiculous.
And Warren Fogle and all these other guys who have the ability to score big goals for you. I'm waiting till there's like a minute and 30. Like, I'm not doing it on the other side of 2 minutes. Like, to me, that's just a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, I think he just got it wrong. Like, I don't think there was any specific, like, oh, well, strategy or anything involved. I think it was just a mistake. Like, I mean, I think he's a guy who's proven he's a decent coach, and maybe he's going to prove to be a better coach. I think he's better than the guy they had previously.
Yeah.
But, look, I don't understand that. Like, I have a hard time understanding why you're pulling him on that side of 2 minutes. Like, you almost never see that.
Well, that's what I said. It was surprising to me. You know, Leon Draisaitl, you're talking about this guy up until yesterday had scored at least a point
in like
every single playoff game, which hadn't been done. I think it posted an NHL record. But you look at these guys and how good they are and their firepower. It is insane. And yesterday, even though you had the top four point getters in the playoffs, between all of them, they only ended that. And throw Zach Hyman in, they had 8 shots total on goal yesterday. That is not going to get it done against the Dallas Stars, but
well, Dallas is the better team.
But
so
I'll tell you what,
I think
Stuart Skinner has stepped up and is playing much better hockey
in the
last couple of games, especially
after
since
being benched.
Yep,
yeah.
After being benched, they brought him back. But you know, Chris, both of our teams are still alive, man. At the beginning, although I got to give you credit, you have said Florida Panthers since almost the beginning of this season was a team that scared you and that you predicted them to win the Stanley Cup, and I got to give you credit for that. But I have been saying since the start of the playoffs. I said right off the get-go, the one team I didn't want to play, you argued with me a little bit, because, you know, and I agree, hey, Dallas knocked them out. I said number one was the Edmonton Oilers. Then I didn't want to play the Dallas Stars. Then I didn't want to play the Colorado Avalanche. Those three teams bothered me the most of the teams they would see in the Western Conference playoffs. And, of course, Dallas took them out. That was the team they had to play. That was the second team I didn't want to see. But I didn't want to see the Oilers strictly for this firepower. And, again, special teams-wise, the best team in hockey, in my opinion. Last year, and even during the course of the season, they weren't as good maybe on the penalty kill. In the postseason, they've been unbelievable on the penalty kill. And, of course, they are almost a juggernaut on the power play because of that firepower. When you've got three of the top goal scorers in the National Hockey League on your team, and you've got five guys that you get to play on a power play, I mean, it's almost unstoppable. And you throw Nugent Hopkins in there, and as you said, Bouchard, the team is so ridiculous. They are fun to watch on the power play, other than if your team's the one playing against them, it's not so much fun.
No, you don't want to be on the other side of that power play for Edmonton. But you know, Dallas doesn't commit a lot of penalties, so your opportunities are going to be extremely limited if you're the Edmonton Oilers. And you know, Brian, I think at the end of the day, Dallas will end up winning this series, and I think that Florida, I think they pretty much got what they wanted in New York. They went in game one, beat them up. The Rangers have scored 2 goals in 2 games. I think they've got New York where they want them. I think they'll go down to Florida. I think they'll win both games, and I think they'll come back to New York. I think that series goes 6, and I think Florida ends up winning it in 6. I think Edmonton and Dallas is going to go 7.
Yeah.
I initially thought that the Stars were going to blow right through them. I don't think so. You mentioned Stuart Skinner, and unless he falls off a cliff, I think the Oilers are in this series for the long haul, because that was the big question mark for me. Could Stuart Skinner keep them in the series? And through 2 games, I think he's been better than Jake Oettinger.
Yeah, you know, and taking nothing away from Oettinger. Oettinger's one of the guys you don't want to face. And again, you look at the final four, and all 4 of their goalies are playing great hockey. And that's what you usually have. I say it all the time. The last line of defense, the goaltender in the National Hockey League, especially coming to the postseason, is so vitally important. And I'm wearing my original 6 hat, the only team left out of the final 4 in the original 6, of course, the New York Rangers. I don't think they can get past the Florida Panthers. They are such a gritty team. And man, a team that's playing it with a chip on their shoulder all last year. You know, coming from the 8-hole last season and making it to the Stanley Cup Finals, everyone thought they were a team of destiny. They ran into the Vegas Golden Knights, who were the real team of destiny last year and the best team in the National Hockey League. This year, it is the Florida Panthers. I agree with you, but I still think the Edmonton Oilers find a way past the Dallas Stars. I believe that. I think their offensive firepower is too much, and I think we'll see a hell of a Stanley Cup final, no matter who's in it. I mean, I like all four of these teams, but I'm going to say it's going to be, we're going to go heads up, Mags. It's going to be the Florida Panthers against the Edmonton Oilers, and I think that will be a hell of a postseason. But it's funny, as good as Bobrovsky played last year leading up to the Stanley Cup final when he kind of fell off a bit, he's played better this year. This guy is absolutely the best goaltender in the National Hockey League now, and we've been saying, hey, Tampa's had the best player for years, and maybe he still is, but this year I think it's Bobrovsky. He's played that well, and this Florida team leans on him. And I'll tell you what's cool, when watching Florida against New York and watching him throughout the playoffs, they take chances and risks because of Bobrovsky. They can be more aggressive on the offensive end and leave him hanging out to dry a bit because he is playing that good and he's that well. But I'm going to say when it's all said and done and the smoke clears, we're going to see the Florida Panthers playing the Edmonton Oilers. Hey, give the Canadians something to cheer about and some hope. They haven't had a Stanley Cup. When is it, though? I know you got to know. It's been forever, right?
Yeah, I think it was 93. I think it was Montreal.
It's been like 30-plus years since they've won a Stanley Cup, and that's unreal considering two of the original six teams are from Canada in Toronto and Montreal. So it is surprising. And I mean, and literally, if you took Canadians out of the National Hockey League, they'd have as many teams as the WNBA. I mean, that's how many Canadians play in the National Hockey League. So huge. I'm happy for them. And I think we're going to see a Florida and Edmonton final. Let's move on, man. Let's get to the NBA Conference Finals, and man, this one is kind of a blowout. I had a feeling this was going to happen. I mean, Indiana simply cannot close. It's just that simple. It's ridiculous. 18-point lead yesterday, Spencer. Midway through the second quarter in the first half, they're winning by 18. They blow it, and again, Indiana could very well be up 2-1 in this series. They were up 3 with 10 seconds to go in game 1. They lost that game, and they were up 8 with a little over 2:30 to go in yesterday's game. I mean, Spencer, you heard Rick Carlisle earlier, you know, talk about that they are going to be ready. I think they're ready to go golfing. What is there any chance that Indiana can salvage this series?
No, absolutely not. Not down 3-0. Yeah, it's crazy. It's all about opportunity. I mean, everything goes back to game one. That's, I think, although not on a literal sense, I think the series ended in game one. I mean, if you can take that first game away from the Celtics, you're talking about a completely different series, especially for a Pacers team that have been really good at home. And now with Tyrese Halliburton's injury, it's over for them. But, you know, they've overachieved. I think the big question for them going into the next season is, are they going to be like the Hawks a few years ago, who made that big run to the conference finals and they've never made it back or even close to since? Or are they a team that has a little bit of staying power? I was shocked that they beat the Knicks. I mean, that game 7 was unbelievable.
Well, the Knicks, look at the injuries.
I didn't want to bring that up, Spencer, because Magnum got mad at me last week for jinxing him. And when they lost, I'm like, damn it, I'm not going to talk to Mags for a couple of days so he forgets that I basically penciled New York in. But, yeah, they were beaten up.
Well, when Jalen Brunson breaks his hand.
Yeah, it's a whole different story. Yeah. And we're seeing that with Indiana. You know, you mentioned Halliburton, Spencer. Do you know that the plus minus this postseason, with Halliburton on the court, they are plus 59. Without him on the court, they are minus 35. That is an astronomical difference. I mean, I'll give credit to, you know, Andrew Nemar, you know, God, talk about a guy stepping up yesterday. Career high 32 points, career high in a quarter. He had 17 points in the second quarter. He couldn't miss for a minute. But, you know, if they have Halliburton, I think they win that game and they at least make it a series. I know it's crazy in Indiana. They love their team, but the Celtics just have too much. You know, besides, you know, Jason Tatum, who's arguably a top three player in the National Basketball Association right now, and Jaylen Brown, who's also a bona fide all-star. You know, you bring over Drew Holiday this year. And how about Al Horford? What is he, about 106 years old now?
Yeah,
And 7 3-pointers yesterday. Unflappable, this dude, hitting everything from the outside. He is just a guy, man. Spencer, he's an ageless wonder.
Yeah, and I think it's about the Celtics organization. I mean, he played for OKC for a couple of years. I think it was 1 year until he made his way to Boston. They told him not to play. He has no place, you know, in that team. A lot of it comes down to purpose, too. But more than anything, he's just one of the greatest professionals, I think, to ever lace them up. Reminds me of the guy, Udonis Haslem from the Heat. You know, maybe not with one organization, but whoever that guy is, you know, he's making a positive difference. And I think OKC was actually kind of stupid just to send him away and literally not allow him to be with the team until they can get, like, legally get rid of him. But they don't ask him to do much, and he plays really hard. And, you know, it's an inspiration. This is a team that has a lot of young talent that I think fell short because they didn't have a lot of veteran presence.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you, Spence. I think that that's the key. They needed more, you know, as far as Indiana went, they needed more, they needed just some more veteran presence. I do, believe it or not, I think they win tomorrow night. They stave off elimination for one game, and I think Boston wins it in five. But after the game, Jason Tatum talked about how good this Indiana team is, and he's like, he says, did you see the game? I didn't see the game, but I saw the highlights, and Indiana should have won the game, but this was Jason Tatum after the game.
You watched the game, didn't you? It was intense. Game three is always, for me, I always enjoy the most game three of the series, like going into to the opponent's home building. You know, it's their first home game. The crowd was electric. They haven't lost a home game since like March 18th. So we knew it was going to be tough. We knew it was going to be a tough battle. And just, it took everything for us to win this game.
Yeah, it did, and it is a tough battle, and as he mentioned, Indiana is a really tough place to play. One of the most electrifying crowds in the NBA, and that's why I think they'll stave off elimination. I think they'll muster up everything to win one game for the Pacers fans, but that'll be it. Turning to the other series, Spence, you know, the team that everyone loves, including me, Minnesota. I mean, Ant-Man is just unbelievable. There's no question Anthony Edwards is going to be one of the best players in the NBA. He is a highlight reel all-American himself, and this year we have really seen his capabilities. You add Karl Anthony Towns to the mix, Rudy Gobert. This is a team that is bothersome, and they're a team that has a lot of talent, but again, Spencer, a team without a lot of postseason experience, and the biggest problem I've seen with Minnesota, similar to Indiana, they just can't close games, Spencer. They can't win games down the stretch, and that's where a team like Dallas, who has guys with a lot of playoff experience, you've got, you know, Kyrie Irving, who's got an NBA title under his belt, and, you know, of course, Luka Doncic, one of the best players in the NBA, all-around player, can do literally everything on a court. And I think what's made Dallas really come together this season is the fact that Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving were able to coexist. They're able to share the basketball, and they have high praises for one another. That is huge. And with that, I don't think Boston should be clearing a space in their trophy case just yet, even though I think they'll find a way to win the NBA title. I wouldn't just hand it to them.
No, you can't hand it to him. And this has been one of the most interesting basketball series I've seen in a long time. I think both games came down to one point. Yeah, Ant-Man has struggled a little bit in some of these games, you know, in the conference finals so far. He has good stat lines, but if you look at the numbers, it's kind of like, you know, just very high usage.
Well, Spence, real quick, just to interrupt you, I want you to keep going. But, you know, you look at it, Ant-Man and Karl Anthony Towns, the two big names for Minnesota, have been outscored cumulatively in the first two games by 44 points by Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. That is too big of a margin.
Yeah, and very inefficient as well. I think both of them are shooting in the 30% range. Karl Anthony Towns in particular is struggling really badly. Like, if he's played well in the series, they're up 2-0. I mean, that's how small the margin has been, and that's how, quite frankly, bad. I think his big problem is he's just like a perimeter guy, despite being a big man, which isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world, but he like refuses to kind of get those easy points, and he's always looking for the outside shot. And I think he's relied on it like way too much right now, and I think that's really what's killing them. Rudy Gobert has been playing really well. I think he's been hitting his free throws too.
Yep.
Like he's kind of doing his part. And it, you know, when it comes to the conference finals, it's a game of inches. You know, one play here, one play there, and you know, Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving have been making it happen, and Ant-Man and Karl Anthony Towns just haven't in the last 2 minutes. That is what has defined this series.
Yeah, like I said, they can't close. And Spencer, one of the famous Brian Feldman stats I'll give you right now, entering this season, there have been 10 teams that have won the first two games of a playoff series on the road. All 10 won the playoff series. All 10 of them. So that's what Dallas has now. They won their first two games on the road, and there's just no way that Minnesota can come back to this. Hey, this is a young team that is just dumb enough to believe they can win and keep winning. Unfortunately, I think they've run into a bit of a juggernaut. Luka Doncic seems to be on a mission, and again, the fact that he's coexisting and sharing the ball the way they are with Kyrie Irving and him, this is going to be a really tough out. I think Boston has too much firepower for anyone to stop him right now. I thought the only team that really had a chance against Boston was the Denver Nuggets coming into the postseason, but I will say right now, I'm not sleeping on the Dallas Mavericks, and I'm thinking that could be a hell of a series, and that's one that definitely could go seven games. We'll see. Today, 5 p.m., game three, and that is going to be at back at Dallas. And Minnesota, pretty much, it's a must-win for them. You can't go down 3-0. In almost any series, it's just way too hard to come back in. Spence, let's move over. Let's go to Aces Up and talk about the Las Vegas Aces. They are now 3-1 on the season after beating the Indiana Fever yesterday, 99-80. Indiana played real well in the first half. They finally got their first win. They're 1-6 now in LA against the Sparks. But this Indiana team is a team that I look for in the future to be pretty good. The biggest issue with the Indiana team right now is the what they've been taking. Their coach lashed out at the fans and people in social media that are really hammering Aaliyah Boston and Caitlin Clark. And, you know, I want to talk about the idiots out there that are criticizing Caitlin Clark and her play and saying she's not that good. She is now 7 games into her rookie season and probably the highest talked about or anticipated player to come into the WNBA, gets a $28 million endorsement deal with Nike, and people are expecting her to score 40 points a night right off the jump in the WNBA. Okay, it's not, that didn't happen. She is, I watched Kelsey Plum pick her pocket. I watched Jackie Young pick her pocket. I watched Asia Wilson swat a layup away from her. They are keying and focused on her, watching every tendency. Spencer, in my opinion, Caitlin Clark will figure it out. She will be a bona fide perennial all-star in the WNBA. People just need to give this woman some time.
Oh, of course. And she's also playing for one of the worst WNBA franchises in existence. To be honest with you, I'm going to put my tin hat on for a second. There's no way they should not have rigged a bigger market franchise to get Caitlin Clark. I mean, I'm pretty sure the NBA does it like shamelessly. I mean, sending guys to the right franchise for marketing.
The Pistons are definitely on your side, Spencer, with that one.
Yeah, the worst draft in NBA history, and they end
two
up with
2 years in a row. They should have had the number one pick. And you're talking about generational players. San Antonio got one last year.
Yeah,
and it's just very bothersome. Again,
what did they get?
I think
fifth this
Wembanyama was fifth, super rigged.
Fifth, Chris. It's unbelievable. So, Spencer, I like that, and I'm not doubting it. I don't know if they're doing it in the WNBA yet, and obviously they're not, because the Indiana
Fever. Vegas wins the lottery and gets the number one.
That would be great. But you know, look at her, you know, real quickly, get to that tape yesterday. I went to the press conference, very small, Indiana, and then I found out after I got there, I guess I didn't look at the email, that that obviously Caitlin Clark wasn't going to be there. That's what I went there for. But Aaliyah Boston was, and this is what she said after the game about what she's experiencing and how they're getting past it.
It's been easy. I just don't look. I take social media off. I don't really pay attention to it. Everyone might be different, But I think for us, it's really just paying attention to our circle. I mean, everyone on the outside can have an opinion. Yes, there's a lot of eyes on us, but I think the important part is that, one, it's the beginning of the season, and then also we're continuing to grow. And so, I mean, you just, everyone does it their own individual way, but I just don't look.
Last year's Rookie of the Year in the WNBA, Indiana's had the first-round draft pick the last two seasons. They will be a better team. They've got to fill a few more holes, obviously. But they played the Aces good in the first half. But I'll tell you what, you could just see it with Jackie Young and Kelsey Plum. They were not going to be shown up by a rookie, and they weren't.
Well, the WNBA is interesting because Indiana, 2 years in a row, have had the number one pick. Aaliyah Boston last year, obviously Caitlin Clark this year. The way I like the WNBA is the teams that suck, they tend to draft really high. And the women's game is set up to where generally that number one pick is a really damn good player. They're probably going to get the number one pick next year, too, because they're so bad this year. This team is going to win an NBA, a WNBA title.
Yeah, with three number one picks, you have to. Listen, we'll talk more WNBA next week. Let's get right to it, Spence. Hit fact this.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Fact this brought to you by Lifelike Hair Center of Las Vegas. If you are experiencing hair loss or thinning hair and want to learn about the best non-surgical options available, call 702-737-5759 or go to lifelikehair.com and schedule your free consultation to get today. I've been waiting on this one. It is a fact. Retired NFL wide receiver Antonio Brown is in dire straits financially and filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy last Monday. Court records show that Antonio Brown owes nearly $3 million to eight collectors, according to the records which were filed in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court of the Southern District of Florida. This comes after a 12-year career in which he made $90 million. Brown's blamed Tom Brady, whose house he lived in while playing for the Bucks back in 2020. He's also blamed coach Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for his abrupt exit from the NFL. The bankruptcy filing continues a tumultuous late and post-NFL career stretch for Brown. In 2020, the NFL suspended him for 8 games for multiple violations of the league's personal conduct policy following the moving truck dispute and accusations he sent threatening texts to a woman who accused him of sexual misconduct. In 2021, Brown settled a lawsuit with a former trainer who accused him of sexual assault. Brown also served a 3-game suspension in 2021 for submitting a fake COVID-19 vaccination card to the Buccaneers. Brown's tenure with Tampa Bay ended in January 2022 after a mid-game outburst that included Brown pulling off his uniform and shoulder pads on the field before suddenly exiting the game. This is the last time I want to talk about Antonio Brown on the show. It is really sad, Spencer, when a guy is that good and just absolutely has 6 inches of problem, and those 6 inches are between his ears.
Yeah, this has been no secret, especially to us in Las Vegas. I mean, this is a guy who had tons of problems every single day he was with the team. The foot problems, nothing surprised me with this guy. He's got issues.
He has issues, a good way to say it. Listen, we're out of time. Want to thank Spencer. Thanks, Mags. I'm Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM at 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll be back next week. Spencer will be in studio with Mags, and I'll be in Costa Rica. We'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.